Hi everybody, this is Alana Carvalho, the codependent perfectionist, and I am here to do a solo podcast today. Unfortunately, Lauren is not feeling well. As you may know from a previous podcast, she's pregnant and she's under the weather. So I am going to go ahead and do a brief podcast for everybody. I got a wonderful question about giving some examples about codependency at different ages. So I figured that I would tackle that today, and hopefully the examples are helpful for you. Whatever age you're at, I think they all apply, and you can maybe look back and see some of your earlier forms of codependency and how that may have stayed with you for many years. So all of the examples that I'm going to give you right now are actual examples that I've talked about with clients recently. And as always, I welcome any questions. So if anything feels unclear or you want to know more about it, feel free to reach out to me. I have since included my email as requested in the information about the podcast. But just as a reminder, it's Alana, A-L-A-N-A, at acarvalotherapy.com. So I'm going to start off with a very early form of codependency. And this came up with a client actually a couple of days ago in session, where she was talking about a major trauma that happened in her life around the age of 5 to 7. And as she was telling me about this trauma, we got into a conversation about whether she had told her parents about what happened. And what she revealed to me is that she did not tell her parents what happened because she was concerned about how they would react or feel about what she was going to tell them. And it's really incredible that at the age of just 5 years old, this person knew that telling her parents something really significant would really hurt them. They would be really upset by it. They might want to do something about it. And so what she decided was that instead of telling them and having them experience any emotional issues as a result of what she shared, that she would just deal with it by herself. And it's interesting because I think we touched on this in another podcast, but one of the ways codependency can manifest is in being overly independent from other people. So this particular woman decided at the age of 5 that she was going to protect her parents' feelings at the expense of herself and not receive any support or guidance or protection, really, because it was more important that she didn't want her parents to be upset. And we have also talked briefly about it being age appropriate at times for us to care about, you know, how our parents feel about what we're doing and how, you know, how we're acting and behaving. And that, of course, happens at a very, very early age. But the real hope is that we grow out of that space and realize that taking care of ourselves and our own needs is more important than just trying to please our parents. And this particular woman never shared her trauma with her parents to this day. They're still unaware of her trauma, unfortunately. And part of that is because her reaction to dealing with these very difficult codependent feelings was to become overly independent and not reach out to people for support because she felt like she needed to take it on all herself. And, you know, at this point, it's very likely that her parents may not know how to support her through this. So, you know, as we become adults, the reasons may change, but you can see how strongly this type of behavior can live within us and continue on, you know, into adulthood in various forms. So it's important to also check in and see if you have a tendency to be overly independent and not allow others in to support you. And we come up with various reasons as to why we think that that's a good idea or why we think that that's, you know, actually what it means to be strong, which I don't agree with. I do think that there's a strength to being able to handle things, of course. This particular woman has many strengths that she's gained as a result of some very difficult experiences, but the real strength, I believe, comes in when we can allow other people to support us and learn to overcome the defenses that we've put in place to protect ourselves when we were young and live on with us into our adulthood, and they're no longer helpful anymore, and they keep us isolated and, you know, it doesn't allow us to work through a lot of our pain. That's really, really important. It's so important. And this particular person has a lot of trust issues, of course, and we had a difficult time forming our own relationship because of that stuff, but eventually she was able to trust and learn how to have people support her, and it's something she continues to work on, but she's done incredible work at moving through her over-independence into a place of more interdependent behavior. And that's something that we can definitely talk more about at another time. And interdependence is a really important place for many of us to get to, where we're not being overly dependent on other people or overly independent, but somewhere in between, because we all need support and we all need people, you know, there to meet our needs. So that's an early example of codependency. And now I'd like to move into a later example that could happen anywhere from the teen years onward. And this example has to do with us identifying when we're in a relationship dynamic that is not working for us, but yet we don't speak up about it. And so actually I was having a conversation today with a client who has been dating somebody, and she felt really hurt because this man asked her to spend some time together and then ended up not getting back in touch with her that day, and not until much later in the day. And then, you know, just casually said, "Oh, hey, what are you doing?" And, you know, she was upset. She was upset that he didn't take the time to consider her and communicate with her about their plans and whether they were still going to spend time together. And of course, you know, this comes up frequently in dating situations, and it can also come up with friendships, of course, too. And so we were talking about this being a pattern in the relationship, right? This wasn't the first time it happened. Maybe it wasn't this exact way, but in different ways, he has let her down and not been responsive or, you know, respectful in his communication with her. And so we talked about the potential of allowing this to continue on, right? And, you know, she said to me, "Well, Alana, the truth is that I don't want to stop seeing him." And I said, "Well, you know, if that's the case, then you're probably going to have a pretty big conversation with him about what you're willing to accept and what you're not willing to accept in the relationship." And she shared with me that she did express to him that she was upset about what happened, but she didn't quite know where to go from there. And I said to her, "Well, how would it look, right, for you to express to him that if you're going to stay in relationship with him, that something will need to change, right? And she had a really hard time identifying what she would say to this person. And she said, you know, Alana, can you give me examples of what I would say to him? Because I don't even know what it would look like to tell somebody that I'm not okay with what they did or how they behaved. And I think that's really significant because as codependents, we tend to think in extremes. Either I'm stuck with this person and the way that they behave, or I have to leave or break up with them, or in some way stop being in relationship with them. And it's really incredible that we don't often consider how it looks to tell somebody what we want or need from them, or what we're also not willing to accept from them. And with this particular client, it took me providing examples of what it would look like to tell this person that this isn't okay, and that next time they need to be more communicative. And none of this needs to be said like nasty or mean. You can tell somebody how you're feeling and what's upsetting you or bothering you without it coming out in a way that seems like you're demanding something of them or in an overly emotional place. But my suggestion to you would be that you really take some time to ground yourself and center and process a little bit before you have that conversation with somebody. Because what can happen is that, you know, of course, if we're in our most emotional place, we're going to say something that we're probably going to regret later because it's overly emotional in nature, rather than simply putting up boundaries and saying what we are or are not willing to accept. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times people say to me, well, you know, if I put up a boundary, this person will leave. And I think that that's really significant, because if we put up a boundary and the person leaves, that really speaks to the relationship that we have with this person. Now, of course, you know, I'm not talking about some like extreme boundary. I'm talking about something that is meant for our own well-being and to protect ourselves. And if someone isn't willing in any way to work with that, then that's very concerning for me as a therapist to hear. Because if someone is truly caring about us, loving with us, they're gonna want us to be okay and be happy, right? And the purpose of putting in boundaries is to protect ourselves and to maintain a level of respect in a relationship. You know, something that I work on often, especially with new therapists or new professionals that are working for themselves, is the importance of putting up boundaries early in a relationship. Because the longer that you wait, whether this is, and again, this goes for all relationships, but especially in business, it can be so destructive, that if you wait to put boundaries in place, that it is likely that people will leave because they won't expect it from you. And they might even be really put off by you putting a boundary in place because it might seem like it's coming from nowhere. Like, where did this come from? Right? But if you're very clear and upfront about what your boundaries are, what your policies are, the other person knows what to expect from you. And so when you have to do something as a result of some sort of boundary breach, it's not a surprise, right? But, you know, what I want you to be aware of is that when you're working on relationships and you've been codependent for a long period of time with whoever it is in your life, it's going to be jarring for you to start putting boundaries in place. And so you just need to be mindful about trying to communicate as clearly as possible around what's going on. And of course, it will look differently if you're doing this in your business than if you're doing it personally. But even it doesn't really matter in some ways, because either way, it has to be really clear. And they are difficult conversations to have, but you can't stay in fear in relationships that people will leave if you take care of your own needs. Think about what that means, right? So I'm going to provide another example, and this one looks a little bit different, but I'm sure many people can relate to this. I had a client who was struggling immensely with his codependency and really all of his relationships. But one of the relationships we were looking at was with his friendships. And what was happening was he was regularly overcommitting himself and agreeing to do things that sometimes he had no intention of doing, and sometimes he just wasn't sure, but he would say yes anyway. And of course, the reason he would say yes to everything is because he wanted to make the other person happy, and he wanted them to feel good. Like, yes, I'm coming to dinner with you, or yes, we're gonna, you know, go spend the day together, or whatever it may be in that moment, right? But then what would happen is it would get closer and closer to that day, and my client wouldn't know what to do because he either had other plans that he also committed to, or he really didn't want to do what he said he was going to, and then he didn't know how to get out of it. And so it's a funny thing that we do as codependents, because in our trying to make other people feel good and not be upset with us, we usually end up letting them down more at a later point in time, right? So what he was doing was really disappointing the people that were close to him, because he couldn't stand to be with the discomfort of saying, I'm not sure, or I need to get back to you, or no, right? And so instead he would say yes when he really didn't mean it. And, you know, the curious thing that happens too is that we end up having a lot of anger and resentment around some of this, like people asking us to do things. And I, you know, again, and I've said this myself at points when I was working through my codependency, that why can't the other person just not ask me to do that? Or, you know, expecting that it's the other person who needs to change in some way, when it's really us who needs to learn how to say no and communicate what's going on for us. And again, you know, one of this person's main issue was not wanting to hurt people's feelings, and yet that's exactly what he was doing. And it's so, I mean, I believe very strongly, it's so much kinder and nicer to be upfront and to be honest with people. And you don't have to tell them everything, of course, right? Like, we're not going to go and say, you know, I actually don't feel like going with you to this thing, or we don't need to say that, right? But we do need to give ourselves some space to say, I'm not sure, or, you know, I have so many plans going on right now, it's really difficult for me to commit to doing that. Can I please get back to you? And the person can say, no, I have to know now. And then, you know, you're allowed to say, well, then I'll have to say no, because I don't want to commit to something that I can't follow through on. So in working with this person, there was a lot of work we had to do on him facing some really difficult conversations that he had really avoided having for many, many years. And it did change a lot of his relationships. But ultimately, the work here is to strengthen the relationships that really are serving you. And hopefully you're also showing up and serving them too. So I'm going to give one more example that has to do with someone asking another person, a friend, to stay with them for some period of time while they get on their feet. And although I'm phrasing it that way, I think this is where we can easily fall into the habit of enabling someone versus maybe actually helping them get on their feet. And when we're helping somebody who has fallen on bad times, we need to be very careful and mindful about the plan that we put in place with them, because if we don't have some sort of solid plan, we can end up just enabling the person indefinitely. So in this example, a single woman who's living alone, her friend calls her and says, "I have nowhere to stay. Can I stay with you?" And of course, she allows her friend to stay. And what she thought was a very short-term situation ends up turning into years of her friend living with her. And not only did the friend, and actually the friend still lives with her, but did the friend continue to live with her for a long period of time, but the friend has a drinking problem. And so the woman who offered the housing didn't set up any boundaries or any plans with her friend. So she allowed her to stay without saying, "You know, I will let you stay here for the next 2 months for free without, you know, getting a job. But if you end up staying past that point, we'll have to start having you pay rent, et cetera, et cetera." And so what ended up happening is that this friend who was seemingly just being nice and offering her home ends up basically becoming an enabler of this woman's alcohol addiction by not saying any of those things to her and just really letting her stay with her indefinitely. And so when I spoke with this person about this situation, you know, I identified that she was in a place where now she was enabling this friend because of the lack of boundaries that she had set up. And unfortunately, the codependency was so strong that she really was not willing to put anything in place to start weaning the person off of the dependency that had been created and moving her towards being able to support herself. And when we're truly helping someone, that should always be the end goal. And I think what happens a lot of times is that we want to support people, but instead of being helpful, we create dependency because we don't consider the importance of this person learning how to take care of themselves, which is ultimately what everybody really needs. And so whenever you are faced with a situation where someone's asking for help, my suggestion is to ask yourself, if I do this, am I really helping them or am I enabling them? Generally, if it's something short term, you know, it may just be that you're helping them out. But be careful, because a lot of times helping will quickly become enabling. And that happens with giving money, all sorts of different ways we quote unquote help people. So just be mindful and check in with yourself on that. Because when you're enabling, you're actually very unhelpful to the person. And that goes back to the old adage of, you know, give a man a fish, feed him for a day, teach a man to fish, feed him for a lifetime. And what you really want, of course, is to help them feed themselves for a lifetime. So thank you very much for listening. I hope you got something out of these examples, and until next time.